First, religion plays a big role in the United States. That's no secret. And religious beliefs can influence what we think about politics. One religious group might care a lot about specific political issues, or people of one faith might be more likely to support one party over another. But our next guest says there's a lot we get wrong about the way religion and politics come together, and we see those myths in the media and in public conversations. He says if you look at the data, there's a more complicated picture of how religion and politics relate than you might think. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're religious or not, is there something you think people get wrong about your faith or lack of same when it comes to politics? Is there anything you think people who think differently than you get wrong about those beliefs? Is there a conventional wisdom about religious politics you want to check with our guests on whether it's the real deal? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ryan Burge is an assistant professor of political science at Eastern Illinois University. He's also a pastor at the First Baptist Church in Mount Vernon, Illinois. His new book is called 20 Myths About Religion and Politics in America. Ryan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, even before you started this book, you've taken on this role as a go-to person to check data and beliefs about religion and politics. Why? How did you fall into that role?
You know what? If you post 1,500 graphs a year for 3 years in a row about religion and politics, I call it the bat signal. I'll be like out with my kids somewhere and I'll see a notification on my phone. Someone tag me, "Hey, Ryan Burge, can you check on this for me?" And I'm like, "I'm not on my computer right now. I can't look at the data." But people constantly try to bring me in on the scene to try to fact check other people's statements about religion and politics that they just don't think look right.
Before we dig into some specific myths, why is it important to get this right, to have a better understanding of religion and faith and politics?
Yeah, I just think, you know, that facts are the building blocks, are the foundation pieces of the way we understand the world. And if we, you know, can't agree on the facts, then we can't even agree on, you know, how to approach policy if we don't know what the problem is. If we don't know how big this religious group is or what that religious group believes or how they vote, how can we really interact with them in a social way? And the problem is, you know, if you look at the data, we asked Republicans to describe Democrats and Democrats to describe Republicans. They have a completely distorted view of each other. So we always kind of like other the other people out there in society, and we create a misconception in our mind, and we don't like that misconception very much when the reality is they're a lot more similar to you than you think they are. And once we get to that point, I think we have a lot more, you know, fruitful conversations and good dialogue. We really see each other for how we really are, not how we misperceive each other.
Now, you picked 20 myths here. How did you fall into picking the ones that you chose? What led you to use these as your examples of what we get wrong?
A lot of it was just, I may have a little note on my phone of like stuff I see on Twitter all the time. And I'm like, I need to go into that more. Like I can't do 280 characters and get that and explain that whole thing. But the other thing that was going on in my mind was I wanted to make sure that I busted some myths that made conservatives kind of nervous, but also some myths that made liberals kind of nervous at the same time. Because, you know, being a mythbuster isn't just about making one party or one, you know, ideological viewpoint feel good. It's about trying to describe the world in an objective way, which means that sometimes the left's not going to be happy and sometimes the right's not going to be happy. And my job is to make everyone feel a little bit upset, but hopefully a lot more enlightened when they see what the data says.
We're talking to Ryan Burge about his new book, 20 Myths About Religion and Politics in America. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If there's something that you know is wrong about how people talk about religion and politics, or if you're wondering, you want a little fact check, Ryan might be able to hook you up. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's get into some of your myths now, Ryan. One, the idea that young people become less religious during or after college. There's a de-religiousizing, if I can make up that word, experience that comes along with college. What does the data show?
Yeah, so there's this, that myth comes, I think largely there was a book or a movie came out called God's Not Dead about 10 years ago, where this evangelical student goes to a public university where there's an atheist philosophy professor. And the entire movie is kind of a conflict between him, the evangelical, and the atheist philosophy professor. The philosophy professor wants the kid to sign a pledge that says God's not dead. And if he doesn't sign it, he can't pass the class. So there's this constant like trope out there. If you send your kids away to college, they're going to leave, you know, perfect evangelicals or perfect, you know, Catholics, and they're going to come back Marxist, you know, quoting Nietzsche atheists. If you look at the data, kids who go to college are actually more likely to go to church than kids who don't go to college. And they're more likely to declare a religious affiliation than kids who don't go to college. If we look at young people, like 18 to 22 year old people today, about 40% of them who are going to college say they're atheist, agnostic, or nothing in particular. It's closer to 50% of 18 to 22 year olds who are not going to college right now. And there's actually other data that says that, you know, the more you expose kids to other religions actually strengthens their own personal faith that much more. So we really shouldn't be afraid of exposing people to other faiths. It actually makes them stronger.
Here's another one, non-denominational Christian churches. And I got to admit to this, as someone who, you know, talks about religion on the air sometimes and just thinks about it, reads about it, I think, okay, you divide up Christianity by, you know, Orthodox, Catholic, Protestant, you've got these well-defined denominations. Everybody's going to end up falling into a category. Well, not so much anymore. What's up with the rise of non-denominational Christianity?
Yeah, I think this is actually a great topic to talk about right now because the Southern Baptist Convention is meeting this week, and every reporter that does religion in America seems to be in Anaheim, California, covering that group, which is an important group. 13.5 million Americans are Southern Baptists. They're the largest Protestant denomination in America, but the share of Americans who are non-denominational Protestant is probably closer to 30 million Americans. So there's twice as many non-denominational Protestant Christians in America as there are Southern Baptists. In the 1970s, only 3% of Protestants said they're non-denominational, and now it's 25% of Protestants say they're non-denominational. And over the last 10 years, the only religious tradition, Christian tradition, that grew in America, it wasn't Baptists or Methodists or Lutherans or Presbyterians, it was non-denominational Protestant Christianity. And there's a future, I think, where there are more non-denominational Protestants there are not than denominational Protestants in the United States.
This means something. What does it mean?
Oh, I think it's a radical rethinking of American religion. Because if you think about what religion is, most denominations are very top-down, right? Whether the Catholic Church is obviously top-down, but also the Episcopalians, the United Methodists, and even at some level, the Southern Baptists do have a national structure that they kind of organize underneath. Non-denominational churches are, you know, they're bottom up, they're grassroots. And many of them were started by pastors who were not pastors at all. They were insurance salesmen or real estate agents or worked in a construction company or something like that. Started a Bible study in their basement. All of a sudden, 2 or 3 years later, they got 300 or 400 people in their church and they really have no theological training at all. So, you know, we're really losing gatekeepers in American society. You know, there's no credentialing for these kind of groups. And so they all kind of they live independently of one another. And we really can't constrain them in any way. Like denominations used to kick pastors out who were, you know, saying unorthodox or heretical things. There's nobody to come in and kick these pastors out. If their church is growing, that's really all that matters to them.
Abortion has been in the news a lot lately with the leaked Supreme Court draft document, the final deal expected to come out any time now. Really, that's one of the myths you looked at, the idea that most Americans are really at one end of the abortion debate or the other.
Yeah, I think that's the one that it's so difficult to try to poll about abortion because people have contradictory opinions about abortion. There was this great study by Tricia Bruce at Notre Dame where she actually did long-form interviews with about 150 people about the topic of abortion. And she would ask them the same question in a different way at different points in the interview. And she would point out when they contradicted themselves and they would kind of smile and laugh a little bit themselves, go, I know I'm contradicting myself. Because people don't, most Americans don't have a clear black and white view on abortion. Even people who are very pro-choice, a lot of them have some trepidation, you know, in certain circumstances, like the government paying for it or late-term abortion or things like that. And even people who are pro-life, you know, they're not exactly against abortion in the case of, let's say, rape or incest or severe fetal defect or life of the mother, let's say. Most Americans are sort of in that pragmatic middle where they don't really find abortion palatable, but they understand that some people want to have an abortion and they don't want to restrict that right. So really what's going on with Roe versus Wade is we're trying to put people into far left or far right camps. And the majority of Americans are kind of in that mushy middle, and they really don't want, you know, abortion to be completely legal in every circumstance. They also don't want it to be completely illegal either.
We're talking to Ryan Burge, assistant professor of political science at Eastern Illinois University, with us today to talk about his new book, 20 Myths About Religion and Politics in America. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about religious affiliations in the U.S., how it fits into the political landscape? Do you have ideas or theories of your own? Is your community, you think, mischaracterized by other people, by the media, by politicians? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Ryan Burge about his new book. It's called 20 Myths About Religion and Politics in America. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, maybe even your own experiences at 800-642-1234. Have you seen your faith community, whatever it might be, changing over the years, getting more political, less political, the people you talk to? Have you switched your faith community, the one you go to observances with, to church, to synagogue, you name it, because of politics for some reason? Or do you have a question just about some of the myths our guest is talking about? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Ryan, I've talked to you in the past about the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, people who say, yeah, I'm not really affiliated with any particular religion or atheism or agnosticism for that matter. And you write in this new book, there's a lot of misconceptions about them. And one of them is the idea that they are, you know, the numbers have been going up. That's true. But the idea that they're people who abandoned church for the most part or left a religious tradition. What do you see actually happening?
Yeah, that's something that a lot of evangelicals ask me about is why are people leaving church? And if you actually look at the data, more and more people are not leaving church. They were never raised with church in the first place. You know, for instance, we ask people in surveys, what was your religion growing up and what is your current religion? And, you know, the share of Americans who are raised without religion is going up every year. It's now over 20%. And what we're seeing is the share of people who are raised without religion, who stay with no religion as adults, used to be one third of them stayed nuns as adults. And now it's two thirds of them stay nuns as adults. So we're seeing more and more people entering adulthood. About one in three Americans now enters adulthood without a religious affiliation, when it used to be less than 10% back in the 1970s. So it's not like people are leaving church, you know, at 25, 30, 35 years old. They never had a religious tradition to begin with, and they never really pick one up as they move into adulthood.
Another nun-related myth, again, N-O-N-E, is that the rise of unaffiliated people, religiously unaffiliated, means the country as a whole is generally getting less religious. What do you see actually happening?
I see religious polarization happening. So, you know, the people who are left now are the real true believers. And that's not just evangelicals. That's also conservative Catholics and, let's say, Orthodox Jews and Latter-day Saints and people like that. What we're really seeing in America is sort of the hollowing out of moderate religion in America. We used to have a tradition in America called the mainline tradition, which was about 30% of America in 1975 that are Episcopalians, United Methodist Church, United Church of Christ, folks like that. They were 30% of America in 1975. Now they're less than 10% of America today. Those used to be kind of the bridging churches where people from both political parties kind of, you know, sat side by side in the pews. And a lot of those people became nuns over time, or their kids are becoming, they were being raised with no religion. So now we're having a bunch of very, very religious people on the right side of the political spectrum and a whole bunch of nuns on the left side of the political spectrum. And really no one in that moderate middle that used to build bridges between the left and the right in America. It's just people on the far sides of the religious and political spectrum in America, kind of shooting arrows at each other and yelling at each other and making and thinking the worst about the other side.
An interesting question that reminds me of, and this can generate debate, I think, in the evangelical world. A decent number of people that you and others have surveyed will identify themselves as evangelicals who go to church never or almost never. And then some of the evangelical people you talk to are like, well, whoa, hang on. You got to show up. How do you square that difference?
Yeah, I wrote a piece for the New York Times that really got a lot of, I think I'm going to, on my headstone, it's going to say Ryan Burge, the guy who talked about never attending evangelicals. but they're a growing force in American evangelicals. So about 40% of people who say they're evangelical on surveys say they attend church never or seldom, which means less than once a year they're going to church. 40% of evangelicals now attend church less than once a year. It was 27% in 2008. So what we're seeing is the word evangelical, which we've always thought is sort of a theological religious term, now in the minds of the average person seems to have sort of jumped the fence from that theological grounding, and now has a cultural and political implication. And I think for a lot of Americans, they're seeing the word evangelical mean I'm very conservative, you know, politically, but I'm also aligned with Donald Trump, let's say. And we're seeing even non-evangelical groups. Let's say, you know, there's a rising number of born again or evangelical Catholics now. About one in five Catholics say they're born again. So we're seeing a rise of these conservative Catholics calling themselves evangelical because they like the cultural cachet of what that word means when they really don't think a lot about evangelical, you know, theology or views of Jesus or anything like that.
bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Lou is with us in northern Wisconsin. Lou, hello.
Hi, guys. I just want to say that religion is a man-made construct. What we are more is spiritual. We're in touch more with the spirit side instead of the traditions and so forth.
And if I may ask you, Lou, if I were to survey you, how would you list yourself on a survey asking, what religion do you identify with?
Right now, I am none. I was an Episcopalian, not quite from cradle, but for quite many years. And I even discerned to go to seminary. But, the greater power led me on a different path. And I understand why now. I have a better understanding because I have a very good relationship with that greater power. And it's a very spiritual life now instead of religion. Like I say that, it involves so many things that are directed by man, not by the spiritual realm.
Lou, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Ryan, an interesting example of someone who puts herself in that nun category. I imagine this has got to be a category that's kind of hard to study, though, in some ways, because some people might have Lou's exact story. Some might have very different stories.
Yeah, what's interesting about Lou is she's actually telling a story I think is actually running rampant across American society, which is a move toward anti-institutionalism, right? She even said it, like, I'm spiritual, but I don't like the institutions around religion. If you ask people on surveys, about 45% of Americans say they're very spiritual, but only 27% of people say they're very religious. Because I think for a lot of people, religion has a institutional component to it, a man-made component to it. They are still very, very religious. By the way, even amongst people who never attend church, they're more likely to say that God exists without any doubt than they are to say that God does not exist at all. So Americans have a stubborn belief in a higher power, even though they've sort of left institutional religion in droves over the last 20 or 30 or 40 years. That doesn't mean their belief in God has gone anywhere. I think in actually some ways it's actually become stronger because it's become more about spirituality than religiosity, let's say.
Thanks for that call, Lou. We're talking to Ryan Burge. His new book is called 20 Myths About Religion and Politics in America. One more I wanted to get into, a very direct political tie. In the media, we often look at a candidate, say a presidential candidate's behavior and their expression of religion. Do they go to church? Do they quote scripture? Things like that. And assume that that is going to have an appeal to voters of a similar faith. Not so much.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the media's got to write stories for the presidential candidates for months leading up to the election. And, religion's always a topic they want to kind of dig into. And when Joe Biden won the nomination for the Democrats, the whole narrative kind of switched to, I bet Joe Biden can win back some white Catholics that Hillary Clinton lost in 2016. But if you look at the data, Joe Biden actually did worse with white Catholics at every attendance level in 2020 compared to how Hillary Clinton did with that same group in 2016. So, the personal religiosity of a candidate, I think, matters very, very little. The most important thing when it comes to voting is the R behind their name or the D behind their name. That's really what guides almost all voting behavior in 2020 or 2022, where partisanship rules everything. And I think religion, I don't want to talk myself out of a job here, but religion has a subordinate role to partisanship in modern American life.
Another question that with the Southern Baptist Convention you mentioned going on now that you looked at is, evangelical traditions in particular, some Catholic, and of course the Catholic Church says no women preaching, no women in these official roles, running church services. What happens when you ask the members of those congregations what they think?
Yeah, people are blown away by this. But if you ask people, are you okay with a woman, given that she's qualified, preaching behind the pulpit on a Sunday morning, you ask evangelicals that, and over 70% of them say they're fine with that. And it's over 70% of Roman Catholics are fine with a woman priest. In the pews, there's not nearly this resistance to female pastors as there are, from the hierarchical structures that exist in both those institutions, the Southern Baptist Convention and the Roman Catholic Church. Americans take very pragmatic views of things like that. And I've done all kinds of work on that data, trying to make that support drop, looking, let's say, just at older men or people who believe the Bible is literally true. And it's almost impossible to find a group where support for women preaching goes below 60%. So there's a lot of widespread support in America, not just, in American society generally, but even in conservative religious circles to allow women to have full access to all leadership roles that men have access to.
In our last couple minutes, what are some questions about religion and politics that you're still trying to figure out how to answer? Data can work for a lot of things. Sometimes it's hard to tease things out.
Oh man. I mean, where do we start, Rob? There's so many things that keep me up at night. One is, you know, why the mainline collapsed. I brought them up earlier, right? The, you know, United Methodist Church, the Episcopal Church, they used to be these powerhouses in American society, American politics, and now they're really sort of marginalized in every single way. If people were sick of evangelicalism and the conservatism that goes along with that, why did they not leave and join a mainline church where, which are much more moderate? They're LGBT affirming. They have female pastors. They're kind of progressive on social policy. A lot of evangelicals who are liberal should have left and gone to those churches, yet they left religion behind entirely. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. That's one. Why did the mainline decline? The other one is, why are people leaving church? I mean, that's one that is like a $1 million question. The problem with that is it's really, really hard to answer those questions. So if I say, for instance, the average Southern Baptist is 20% more conservative today than the average Southern Baptist 30 years ago, the problem is those aren't the same people today as they were 30 years ago. That group's gotten smaller over the last 30 years. So is it the moderates and the liberals that left, or just the people there became more conservative over time? That's a really hard data problem to solve because you have to use what's called panel data, which where you ask the same people the same questions over a long period of time. It's really, really expensive. It's really, really cumbersome. And by the time you get that data back, I'll be in my 60s and won't want to write about it anymore. So that's just two of many, many that I think about at night, things I can't answer right now.
Ryan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Ryan Burge, assistant professor of political science at Eastern Illinois University and a pastor in the American Baptist Church, with us today to talk about his new book. It's called 20 Myths About Religion and Politics in America.